back to Two-Way Talk here on WEAA 88.9 FM. I'm Carol Williams.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Dean Kim Sidnor is going to tell us about the new Health and Human Services building that they broke ground on today. And later, Dr. McFadden will be talking to us about the same thing. Welcome to Two-Way Talk, Dr. Sidnor.
Thank you for having me. WEAA, favorite radio station.
All right. That's what we love to hear. Now, we're so excited to talk to you. Tell us about this new $156 million building you broke ground for today.
Well, I think the number they said this morning was $170 million, and even my eyes went wide. So you know to whom much is given,
that's
much
right.
is expected.
That's right.
And so Morgan State University within this building is going to house, I think for the first time, multiple schools. So it'll be the School of Community Health and Policy, where I'm the dean, the School of Social Work, Anna McFadden is going to be on later. We also have portions of the School of Education and Urban Studies housed there with the Family and Consumer Science. And then we have portions of the School for Computer, Math, and Natural Sciences with MedTech and the University Council. And other sundry.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't want to miss anybody out there.
That's
I don't
right.
want anybody mad at me. But I think I got all the good and the most important and the major, really, inhabitants of the building that will be launching in 2024.
So, Dean Sidnor, could you tell us what can students and what can faculty expect from this new conglomerate, this new school building?
Well, one, they can expect a beautiful edifice because
yes.
the architects have done a wonderful job in blending that building with the broader community.
Mm-hmm.
For our students and faculty, social work and School of Community Health and Policy in particular have been laboring in our Jenkins on the Quad building. So I'm not going to, you know, denigrate the building.
Of course.
But all I'm saying, it was time for a new one. So faculty and students can expect a state-of-the-art place in which they can live and learn and work together.
Mm.
So we're really excited about that. Technology, all the current technology is there. And the space has also been designed conducive to learning. So nice small hubs, convening spaces, not just large classrooms, all different sizes and types and ways. I really think to accommodate the current way we're learning how to educate our students. So I think both faculty and students will be excited about it as a learning environment.
So, Dean Sidnor, can you tell us about the nursing program and the opportunities that are afforded to our students?
Well, the nursing program, and so I have to shout out to Dr. Maya Anderson, our nursing program director, if she's listening, and all the nurses. First off, the nurses have done a yeoman's job of staying in place on campus all the way through COVID, and I think I want to make sure they're recognized for that, that while some of us could be completely virtual, you cannot train nurses completely virtually. So they were on campus learning, teaching, building skills in order to create the next vanguard of diverse, highly skilled, excellent nurses.
Mm.
And so the work they do there is really critically important. And nursing, I think everybody's seen the data around the shortage nationally, the shortage in Maryland. They've been working to move our students as quickly as they can from graduation to placement. I'm also a member of the board for MedStar, Good Samaritan Union Memorial. They're experiencing nursing shortages and challenges. So nursing is really one of those professions that's high demand, but it also requires, and everybody needs to understand this, a high level of investment in education.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It really is a rigorous curriculum, and so I'm really proud of the students who come through these programs because they do so with a huge science base companion with this ability to care for their patients.
So I was very impressed, and you just touched on it, that there is a national shortage of nurses. And watching them through the pandemic, so many of them were so dedicated that they put their own health at risk. They put their families at risk. So what we are doing here at Morgan is we are preparing the next generation of medical professionals to meet that growing need. And there is this huge shortage. So what you all see happen here on the campus of Morgan State University is the preparation for that next generation of nurses and medical professionals.
And right. Yeah, and it really is an opportunity to expand the program slightly. We're not the largest, but this new building will give us a chance to expand it and then expand the tools that we have to do that training for excellence that you just described. Because we do, and in having, we're not the only HBCU with a nursing program. There are multiple ones. All of us need to be producing. I'm just so proud and happy that Morgan is making this investment in this new building for our nursing program. But we need each and every one of our programs to succeed and do well in preparing the nurses we need. Really, we need them today, but they'll be ready tomorrow. right.
So that had to be like a hard feat to keep them motivated to go out in the world and be a nursing or medical professional during a COVID, during a pandemic. Did you see any of your students that were having second thoughts about going into that profession?
No. As a matter of fact, the numbers are swelling in the nursing program. I mean, COVID has only increased people's interest and desire to become a nurse, and the numbers are literally swelling in enrollment. I think you probably have heard or will hear Dr. Wilson talking about Morgan's enrollment coming next fall or coming this fall. And a number of those are our nursing majors. They really are filling the ranks. And for the nurses on the job who also had academic and clinical responsibilities, not a single person shied away from the co-responsibility to train and to care. And so I am proud to say that our nurses were out there front and center doing all they could do. And I hope they know, have told them before, but will say again with all to hear, that we're so proud, we're so grateful and appreciative for their sacrifice and commitment to population health.
I was just thinking about something, because when we get professionals like you, Dr. Sitnor, on, what's your thoughts when you have to turn on the news or you're on social media and people are just giving out so much misinformation about COVID? Over 700,000 people died early on. About 300,000 people have died since the Delta variant. What do you say when people say, Dean, this is not real?
It really breaks my heart, honestly, because part of it, and I've said this before in other forums, part of it is a problem of public health and the way we communicate. Mm-hmm. When you leave the spaces for credibility open to others to fill, sometimes it gets filled with the wrong folks and the wrong voices. So, it saddens me that we have not done a better job, and it proves that we need to do a better job there. The other part is that I understand that the way people pick up information, who they find as credible sources, it varies by population. I was listening to your prior call, and people have interesting perspectives,
yes,
right?
Yes, they do.
they do, and so you have to respect those, and then you need to be in communication with those folks. Mm-hmm. So while at the same time it breaks my heart, and it's very, very difficult to break a misinformation once it's locked into the system, I also understand it's an opportunity for communicating and translating and sharing with people the fact that you hear my husband in the background trying to listen to me on the radio. Sorry. It's also an opportunity for us to teach and educate, and we should take that opportunity the same way you did, was to take that moment and turn it into a teachable moment, a respectful moment, and each one of us who knows what is right and what is correct needs to have that conversation with somebody who needs to be informed and to have their mind expanded. A lot of work to do, which is why we need all hands on deck. All hands on deck. I'm not a social media, guru by any stretch of the imagination, but if you're on social media, get into your networks, those silos that create this misinformation, and break them up with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, reality will or will not set in. Some people may not change their minds, but our job is to do the best we can with what we have and with all the people we can, and just do better. But it is just devastating. And sometimes, to be honest, really frustrating, too.
Frustrating. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the list of dignitaries that joined Dr. Wilson and you and all the others today at the groundbreaking. It has to make you feel good when state officials, City officials all want to be present because what you all are going to do in this new school, it really, not new school, but in this school, in this new building, really right. is important to the future of our city, important to the future of our country.
It really is. I think I said today, I was telling the joke that my sister called me last night and said, "Are you ready for tomorrow?" I was like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "The groundbreaking. You have your speech ready, right?" I was like, "I hadn't thought about it. I better get it together because they're going to be right. All these dignitaries there tomorrow." So the words that kept resonating with me were joy,
yes.
Promise, excitement, and responsibility. And then the one that hit me today that I talked about the most was community. Mm. It is that this building is going to, I really know and feel in my heart, personification of our commitment and relationship to community, both internal and external to Morgan. And so having all those dignitaries there talking about the school, recognizing like all our schools, not just one school, and that was the other conversation that I said to Dr. Wilson, this will be the first time to housing multiple, but this is a good thing. But this mm-hmm. This is the way dollars should be spent. I personally believe mm-hmm. maximizing, being efficient, effective, mm-hmm. and then we work as teams. And so all these folks together, and to have the dignitary, Lieutenant Governor,
Congressman
Mfume, yes. the Mayor Scott, the Maggie Washington, Maggie McIntosh. Senator Washington, Nick Mosby. I know I'm going to miss a name, so I better stop. And everybody else who was there.
But they were out.
And they spoke so eloquently. I said to Senator Washington, she spoke so eloquently about health equity mm-hmm. and what was going on in the state of Maryland, and she knew so much about what was going on in the building that I knew that they weren't there just for form or fashion. You know, is that that term, some folks will know what that means. They were not there today just for form and fashion. They were there because an important thing happened today for mm-hmm. that neighborhood, for Baltimore City, and the investment in it by all the folks inside and outside Morgan is very clear.
And we are blessed that you are a leader at this school and that you are really intimately involved in building the future for our country. And Morgan is right there on the cutting edge. Thank you so much for being with us. I love your energy. I love your vision. And it's so important. Thank you so much, Dean Kim Sitnor. Really appreciate you.
All right. Stay in touch with us. Take care.
Almost definitely.
Thank you.
Dr. Anna McFadder was just with us the other day. She is the dean of the School of Social Work and Behavioral Sciences. She is joining us just to give us a little update on mental health and some of the great things. Dr. McFadder, thank you for joining us today.
I'm very happy to do that. And again, today, I am the dean of the School of Social Work and the Behavioral Sciences.
I think that's what I said when I introduced you.
We said social work and behavioral sciences.
Okay.
Because behavioral science is in another unit in the university.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for that correction.
Okay.
Yeah. So now why are you joining us today?
I was asked to do it, and I wanted mm-hmm. to really use the opportunity to say what a magnificent day it was.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a department chair and a dean at Morgan for more than 25 years. And to see this come to fruition, it just brings extreme joy and excitement in terms of the possibilities.
Yes.
As you know, in social work, not only are 70% of social workers are mental health clinicians,
mm-hmm.
Nation, social workers are everywhere.
Mm.
They're in hospitals, they're in school systems, they're in nursing homes and hospice centers, they're in the public defender's office.
Yep, they're everywhere.
And mm-hmm. I think that the impact is what touches me the most.
Mm.
Are we making a difference? Are we able to make a difference? And so we prepare social workers to work in urban communities. You know, we're not trying to serve the entirety, you know, of the geographic area. We're concerned about the city. And so our faculty, you know, complete internships in more than 200 agencies and organizations in the city. Very often, you know, providing services that small nonprofits may not have the wherewithal to do. And they're doing that because they're learning you know, sort of pulling together what they learn in the classroom in terms of a theoretical knowledge base and connecting that to the reality of practice.
Now, I'm just very curious, how is the School of Social Work, and you know you're always welcome on Two-Way Talk, and we can talk about your school and all the wonderful schools here at Morgan State University. How are you preparing these students to address all those areas that you mentioned? Really, a social work, the profession is everywhere.
It is. And you stole my slogan. So when I say that to my dean colleagues on the campus, social workers are everywhere. You can't go any place, you know, that they're not social workers. Graduate students in a bachelor's in social work, a master's in social work, an online master's in social work,
wow.
and a PhD in social work.
Mm-hmm.
And so those social workers operate at, you know, very different levels.
Mm-hmm.
But the focus that we put on it, on our you know, our education and training of those social workers, is that you first need to have a very good understanding of urban communities
mm-hmm.
and the people who live in urban communities.
That's right.
Right? You have to understand the barriers that get in the way of people living healthy lives, as my colleague Dr. Sindor talked about. And I think that we generally know that those barriers, historic, current and historic individual and community trauma, mental health and addiction, and a variety of different things. But we start with an understanding. What is this community about?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the concerns in the community? Why is it that? You know, why do things, you know, that affect our people, you know, sort of continually and persistent kinds of issues.
Mm.
You know, why are we at this point in our history again fighting for the right to vote?
Yes.
Oh. You know, why are we, you know, fighting just to have to try to bring some kind of equity, you know, to our people that has long escaped them?
Mm-hmm.
And so the focus is on urban communities. Is you can't serve in urban communities in providing any kind of help, mental health
mm-hmm.
Services, addiction, child welfare, gerontology, public health, social work, until you have a grasp of that. That is the context of our training in social work. And then we move on to providing students with the clinical experience. If you mm-hmm. want to do clinical work, then there are some things that you need to learn about that as well. And so if you want to work with the youth, then we have you know, specialization in youth where you really have to have a great deal of knowledge about human behavior, you know, why people engage in aberrant and criminal behavior,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's an expansive knowledge base and very, very different from some other fields in the helping profession.
Mm-hmm.
And so our PhD students, we started a PhD program in 2007, our first graduate in 2010. And since then, we have awarded 50-plus PhDs to African-American women and men.
Wow.
They conduct research. They're activist scholars. They're policy wonks. You know, they do all kinds of things. The research that is applied research. Mm-hmm. You know, not research for research sake,
mm-hmm.
but how will this research help to solve the problems that we are concerned about?
And I'm wondering if when we're talking about this urban environment, and Morgan is on the cutting edge of so much that's going on in our community and our society, such an emphasis on mental health now and knowing how to deal with the mental and social problems of the urban environment. What you're doing in your school, what you're doing at the School of Social Work, is really preparing a next generation to deal with the changing environment in our community, in our culture.
Mental environment.
Yes, absolutely. As you know, this pandemic has laid bare the issues that our community continue to be faced with: structural racism, inequality, poor school system, poverty. It has exacerbated those things. And with all of that comes the anxiety, the stress that creates, it makes it very, very difficult for people to be enclosed in their homes and struggling with these issues. The grief and the loss, that is associated with losing so many of our family members and our community, the struggles over why don't you want to be vaccinated, and on and on. And so what makes preparing urban social workers distinctly different is that we recognize that you cannot be an effective social worker, mental health clinician, without being well aware of all of the environmental and social issues that impact people. For example, we recently had a conference just before COVID-19. Zeke Cohen brought to our campus 300 youth voices. It was very painful to hear our children talk about, when I wake up in the morning, my stomach starts to hurt because I worry about whether my friend is going to get jacked or whether I'm going to die. And you cannot, grow up with that feeling that you're afraid to go to school because you're afraid that something is going to happen to you. And so it's those kind of things. Social workers are in K-12 schools. I gave an example today in my presentation that in Chicago, a couple of years ago, the Chicago K-12 teachers, went on strike. And one of their non-negotiable issues is we have to have social workers in every school in this city.
Yes.
Because
issues that they present obstruct their ability to learn.
And in the police department.
Right. And with the police department, too. If people don't know yet, the police cannot alone solve the problem in our cities. They cannot. And so and the expectation that we can do that is just irrational. So people need to gain a greater understanding of, what causes people to commit crimes? What is that all about? What is the ideology? And then we pull together the best minds to help us understand, what can we begin to do, to meet people where they are so that they can begin to see possibilities for their life, rather than, I don't need to worry about it because I'm going to be dead at 18.
Wow.
That cannot continue to be the trajectory for our children.
Yeah.
Dr. Anna McFadder is Dean of the School of Social Work at Morgan State University. Thank you for spending some time with us. Look forward to talking to you again. Keep doing all the great work you're doing and preparing these young people for the future.
I thank you so much, and we'll be happy to further the conversation anytime you wish.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, we got to take a very quick break. We'll be right back here on Two-Way Talk.